Leon's first stop in Nairobi was at the headquarters of the Greater Lake Victoria Trading Company in the main street. The Vauxhall's engine was still stuttering and backfiring in preparation for final shutdown when Mr. Ghulam Vilabji Esquire rushed out of his emporium to greet him. He was followed closely by Mrs. Vilabji and a horde of small, caramel-hued cherubs with raven hair and enormous liquid dark eyes, all clad in brilliant saris and chittering like starlings. Mr. Vilabji seized Leon's hand before he had alighted from the truck and shook it vigorously. "You are 1,001 times welcome, honoured sahib. Since your last visit to us, my eyes have alighted on no finer vista than that afforded by your pleasing visage." He led Leon into the store without releasing his grip on his right hand. With the other, he swatted at the circling swarm of children. "Away with you! Be gone! Bad children, wicked, and uncivilized female personages," he cried, and they took not the least notice, except to keep just out of range. "Please forgive and forget them, sahib. Alas and alack, Mrs. Vilabji produces only female personages, despite my most dedicated endeavours to the contrary." "They are all extremely pretty," said Leon gallantly. This encouraged the smallest cherub to sidle in under her father's ineffectually swinging hand and reach up on tiptoe to take Leon's. She helped her father to lead him into the building. "Enter, enter! I beg of you, sahib! You are 10,000 times welcome!" Mr. Vilabji and the cherub led him to the back wall of the store. The colourful religious icons of the green-faced, multi-armed goddess Kali and the elephant-headed god Ganesh had been moved to the far ends of the wall to make way for the most recent addition to the gallery. This was a large gold picture frame with a wooden plaque, ornately carved and painted with gold leaf. It bore the legend, "Respectfully dedicated to Sahib Leon Courtney, Esquire, world-renowned polo player and shikari, esteemed and deeply beloved friend and boon companion of Colonel Theodore Roosevelt, President of the United States of America, and of Mr. Ghulam Vilabji Esquire." Behind the glass of the frame were pasted a number of the English-language newspaper clippings originating from American Associated Press. "My family and I are very much hoping and praying that you will sign one of these splendid publications to be the jewel in the crown of my collection of cherished memorabilia of our friendship." "Nothing would give me greater pleasure, Mr. Vilabji." Despite himself, Leon was deeply touched. The Vilabji girls crowded around him as he signed a photograph of himself. "To my good friend and benefactor, Mr. Ghulam Vilabji Esquire, sincerely, Leon Courtney." Blowing on the damp ink, Mr. Vilabji assured him, "I will treasure this personally handwritten autograph for the rest of my days as long as I shall live." Then he sighed. "I suppose that now you wish to speak about redeeming your genuine elephant ivory tusk, which I still have in my possession." When Manioro and Loycott carried the tusk out to the truck, Leon followed them with small girls hanging from both his hands and others firmly clutching the legs of his khaki trousers. Only with difficulty was he able to dislodge them and climb into the driver's seat. He drove on to the new Mutaiga Country Club, whose pink-painted brick and plaster walls had replaced the old settler club's whitewashed mud daub on a site far beyond the teeming bustle of Main Street. His uncle Penrod was waiting for him in the members' bar. The first thing Leon noticed as the colonel rose to greet him was that he had put on a bit more flesh, especially around the belt. Since their last meeting more than a year ago, Penrod had moved up from the category of well-covered to distinctly portly. There was also a little more grey in his moustache. As soon as they had shaken hands, Penrod suggested, "Shall we go to lunch? Today, Sheffy's serving steak and kidney pie. It's one of my favourites. I don't want the riff-raff to get at it ahead of me. We can talk as we eat." He led Leon to a table on the terrace under the pergola of purple bougainvillea, set discreetly out of earshot of other diners. As he tucked the white napkin into the front of his collar, Penrod asked, "I suppose Percy's shown you the articles written by that Yankee Andrew Fagan and the letters from prominent people that they have evoked?"
"Yes, I have them, sir," Leon replied. "As a matter of fact, I found them rather embarrassing. People seem to be making such an awful fuss. I'm certainly not the greatest hunter in Africa. That was Kermit Roosevelt's idea of a joke, which Fagin took seriously. Actually, I'm still a greenhorn. Never admit it, Leon. Let them think what they want to. Anyway, from what I hear, you're learning fast. Penrod smiled comfortably. As a matter of fact, I had a small hand in the whole subterfuge. Rather neat, I thought. Little stroke of genius. How are you involved, Uncle? Leon was startled. I was in London when the first articles appeared. They gave me a bit of a brainwave. I cabled the military attaché at our embassy in Berlin and asked him to tout the articles to the German press, especially the sporting and hunting publications that are read by the upper crust. It's a stereotype that most of that type of German, like their English counterparts, are enthusiastic sportsmen and have their own hunting estates. My plan was to lure the notables among them here to go on safari with you. This will give you the opportunity to gather all kinds of intelligence, which will certainly prove invaluable when the time comes that we have to fight them. Why would they want to confide in me, Uncle? Ha! Leon, my lad, I cannot believe you're completely unaware of your winning ways. People seem to like you, especially the Fräuleins and the Mademoiselles. Safari life, being close to Mother Nature and her creatures, has a way of inducing even the most reticent to relax, lower their guard, and speak more freely, not to mention the way it also loosens the strings of female corsets and drawers. And why would a senior figure in the Kaiser's Germany, a major arms manufacturer or one of their consorts, suspect a fresh-faced innocent like you of being a nefarious secret agent? Penrod lifted a finger in the direction of the head waiter, who hovered nearby in his flowing white ankle-length kanza, scarlet sash and tasselled fez. "Malonzi, please bring us a bottle of the 1879 Chateau Margaux from my private bin." Malonzi returned, bearing the lightly dusted claret bottle in white-gloved hands, with the reverence it deserved. Penrod watched him go through the solemn ritual of drawing the cork, sniffing it, then decanting the glowing red wine. He poured the first few drops into a crystal glass. Penrod swirled it around and sniffed the bouquet. "Perfect. I think you'll enjoy this, Leon. Count Pilleville was awarded the Premier Grand Cru Class Appellation for this particular vintage." After Leon had paid respect to the noble claret, Penrod waved for Malonzi to bring on the steaming platters of steak and kidney pie with a golden crust. Then he fell to with a will, and spoke through a mouthful. I took the liberty of going through your mail, especially that from Germany. I just couldn't wait to see what fish we had in our net. I hope you don't mind." "Not at all, Uncle. Please feel free." "I picked out 6 letters as especially worthy of our attention, then cabled the military attaché at the embassy in Berlin, who sent me political appraisals of the selected subjects." Leon nodded cautiously. 4 are especially important and influential persons in either the social, political, or military sphere. They would be privy to all affairs of state, and if not actually members of his council, certainly they are confidants of Kaiser Bill. They will have intimate knowledge of his intentions and preparations regarding the rest of Europe, together with Britain and our empire." Leon nodded again, and Penrod went on. "I've discussed this with Percy Phillips and told him that you are, over and above all your other responsibilities, a serving officer in British military intelligence. He has agreed to cooperate with us in all ways possible." "I understand, sir." "The one prospective client we've picked out in preference to the others is the Princess Isabella Madeleine Hoherberg von Preußen von und zu Hohenzollern. She is a cousin of the Kaiser, and her husband is Field Marshal Walter Augustus von Hoherberg of the German High Command." Leon looked suitably impressed. "By the way, how is your German, Leon?" "It was once fair to middling, but is now more than a little rusty, Uncle. I took both German and French at school." "Yes, I saw that in your service record. Seems languages were your top subject. You must have an ear for them. Percy tells me you speak Kiswahili and Maya like a native. But have you had much contact with German speakers? I went on a walking tour of the Black Forest during one holiday with groups of other scholars. I met a number of locals with whom I rubbed along rather well. One was a girl called Ulrika. Best place to learn a language, Penrod remarked. Under the bed covers. We never got round to that, sir, more's the pity. I should hope not. Well-bred young gentleman like you, Penrod smiled. Anyway, you'd better brush up. You're going to spend a great deal of time in the company of Germans soon, much of which might in fact be under the bed covers, given the predilections of upper-class fräuleins. Does this possibility offend your high moral standards?
I shall try to come to terms with it, Uncle.
Leon could scarcely refrain from smiling.
Good man. Never forget that it's all for king and country.
When duty calls, who are we to forbear? Leon asked.
Exactly. Couldn't have phrased it better myself. And fear not, I've already found a language tutor for you. His name is Max Rosenthal. He was an engineer at the Meerbach Motor Works in Wieskirche before he came out to German East Africa. For some years after his arrival, he ran a hotel in Dar es Salaam. There, he developed an over-intimate relationship with the cognac bottle, which lost him the job. However, he's only a periodic drunk. When he's sober, he's a first-rate worker. I persuaded Percy to employ him to manage your safari camps and to sharpen up your use of the lingo.
When they parted on the front steps of the club, Penrod took Leon's arm in a conspiratorial grip and told him seriously,
I know you're new to the business of spying, so I offer a word of advice. Write nothing down. Keep no notes of what you observe. Rather, record it all in your head and report it to me when next we meet.